Okay, today we're doing a deep dive into a really significant shift we've seen lately, the growing interest people have in owning rural land.
Yeah, it's definitely accelerated. We want to look at what's drawing people in, the advantages they see.
Exactly. Our source material, it jumps right in talking about this mass exodus from cities and towns.
Right, specifically highlighting 2020-2021. That period seems to have been a real catalyst.
It mentions this unwarranted solidarity from COVID forcing a rethink. Like people realized maybe they didn't need to be packed so close together.
And that's where the core appeal seems to lie, according to the research we looked at. It frames land ownership as the ultimate way to live in complete freedom.
Complete freedom. That's quite a
It
phrase.
is freedom from neighbors, freedom from restrictive rules, the freedom to really shape your own environment. It's about control, fundamentally.
Autonomy.
Autonomy. It's
Yeah.
interesting. It makes you wonder, though, is the main driver what you gain, like self-sufficiency?
Or is it what you're trying to get away from?
Yeah, like the noise, the density, relying on external systems for everything. That's sort of the underlying question today, I think.
Definitely. We're going to unpack the three big pillars supporting this mindset. Let's call it maybe autonomy, resilience, and legacy.
I like that. Autonomy, resilience, legacy. Okay, let's get into it.
So first up is how land ownership connects to, well, customized self-sufficiency, often through hunting.
Right. And the sources are clear. Not everyone buying land is a hunter.
No, not at all. But the option is often a big part of the appeal. It signals that control over your food source, at least potentially.
It taps into that autonomy pillar straight away.
And what's really fascinating looking at the material is the level of customization involved for those who do hunt. It's not just casual.
How so?
Well, owning the land turns it from, relying on public access spots to something you can actively manage, engineer almost.
Engineer. Okay, tell me more. What kind of specifics are we talking about? Because not everyone listening might know the terms.
Sure. So the sources mention things like custom food plots. That's where you plant specific crops. Fields designed purely to attract and nourish the wildlife.
Ah, okay. So you're managing the habitat directly.
Exactly. And then you've got things like deploying trail cams for constant monitoring, setting up permanent deer blinds, tree stands. It becomes less about luck, more about stewardship, land management for a specific result.
Stewardship. That ties right back into resilience, doesn't it? The idea of self-sufficiency.
It does. The sources really connect those dots. You're providing the habitat, and then you're harvesting food from those same animals. It's presented as a closed loop.
A very direct connection to your food.
And the argument extends beyond just, putting meat on the table. For people who start hunting as adults, the cited benefits are quite profound.
Like what?
Well, guaranteed access to organic meat is a big one. The emphasis there seems less on cost saving and more on supply chain integrity, knowing exactly where it came from.
Which feels like a reaction against the industrial food system we usually rely on.
I think so, yeah. And beyond the food itself, the authors talk about the educational side, learning about conservation, really appreciating the animal and the process.
And passing those lessons on.
Yes, unlimited life lessons for the family. It's framed less as a sport and more like a really important complex skill, something that boosts the family's resilience overall.
Okay, that makes sense. And it leads us nicely into the second pillar you mentioned, scalable production. This is more about the farming and gardening side.
That's right. This is where you get those tangible results of resilience. The sources talk about this deep, almost emotional satisfaction.
Providing food from your own soil.
Yeah, one author literally says the pride and security from that can't be described. It's powerful stuff.
But farming, that word can sound pretty daunting, especially if you're coming from the city.
It can, absolutely. But the key insight here, according to the material, is that owning the land means you control the scale. There's no pressure to go commercial or match anyone else.
You set the pace.
Totally.
Yeah.
You could start super small, a few raised beds, right? Tomatoes, cucumbers, maybe some squash for the fall, just hobby gardening.
Okay. Manageable.
Or if you have the space and the time, you could scale it way up.
Yeah.
Aim to provide, a serious amount of your family's fruits and vegetables year round.
So it adapts to your resources, your land size, your available time.
Precisely. It's not driven by market demands, it's driven by your goals.
Now, for our listeners who know a bit about this, moving from a few tomato plants to serious production, that takes real investment, doesn't it? Equipment, knowledge, time. Does the material acknowledge that reality check?
It does, but off through the lens of education and legacy again, It stresses that even if it stays a hobby, the value is immense.
How so?
Just the act of getting the family outside, engaging with nature cycles, planting, growing, harvesting, learning through trial and error.
Things you can't easily learn from a book.
Exactly. The source calls them invaluable lessons that can really only be taught by doing. Patience, biology, hard work, things that are much harder to instill, apparently, when you're living in an apartment or a crowded suburb where everything's managed for you.
Okay, so again, it comes back to control over the environment, but also learning and engagement, which brings us to the third pillar, limitless recreation.
Yeah, this is the pure enjoyment factor, where owning land shifts from being just practical, about resilience, to being about, well, customized fun.
And the sources list a really wide range of activities here.
Incredibly diverse. It really highlights how city or suburban limitations just vanish.
I thought the examples of large-scale recreation were particularly interesting. It's not just, you know, going for a hike, which you could do in a park.
Right. It's things like having enough clear space to actually build, say, a regulation-sized soccer field or a softball diamond.
Yeah, okay. Or even a proper shooting range. Tailored just for your family.
Exactly. Customized to your interests. Then there's ATV use. That's a big one mentioned.
For getting around the property or?
Both. Just utility. Getting from A to B on a large plot, but also carving out a dedicated track for the kids to ride safely. Something impossible in most neighborhoods.
Plus the classics, fishing, camping.
But on your own terms. No booking campsites, no permits needed for your own pond. Just freedom.
It's interesting. The sources seem to link that freedom directly with safety.
I do. The idea is that kids get this amazing freedom to roam and explore.
While parents get peace of mind because they're away from, and I think this is a quote, the dangers other people may bring.
Yeah, that avoidance aspect seems quite strong there. Controlling the social environment, who your family interacts with.
Which also plays into the social side of things, right? The land as a destination.
Absolutely. The material suggests that when you own acreage, you kind of automatically become the destination spot for friends and family gatherings.
Instead of cramming into a living room.
You're hosting huge bonfires, massive BBQs, outdoor parties. It changes the whole dynamic of socializing. Less contained, more expansive. And it's all on your terms.
So let's try and synthesize this. We've got these three pillars. Customized self-sufficiency via hunting and management.
Scalable production through gardening and farming.
And limitless freedom and enjoyment through recreation. It really paints a picture of wanting comprehensive independence.
I think that's right. Financial independence, maybe, through food resilience. Physical independence with the space. Social independence by controlling the environment.
And the source material really leans into this, encouraging people to follow the trend.
It does. It acknowledges it's a big move, but frames it as something they strongly believe in. Moving away from the crowd, securing your own piece of land.
It taps into those core dreams, doesn't it? Running with the dog in a field, providing off the land, building that legacy.
Yeah. And it argues that now is really the best time to be doing it. But importantly, there's a practical note. It stresses you need to do it right by working with land professionals.
Oh, okay. Because buying acreage isn't like buying a house on a suburban street.
Not at all. You're essentially buying an ecosystem, as you said earlier. Land pros understand the complexities, mineral rights, water access, easements, soil types, zoning, potential infrastructure needs like wells or septic systems, even specialized internet access.
Things you might not even think about. They help manage the responsibility that comes with all that freedom.
That's the crucial point. This isn't just about the dream. It's about taking on a significant amount of responsibility that, in a city, is handled by municipal systems.
A really important distinction. Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive into these shifting views on land ownership and that neo-agrarian dream of autonomy. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. And maybe just one final thought to leave you with.
Go for it.
If the big draw is this idea of complete freedom and total customization, how much of that appeal do you think is about the tangible things you gain, the garden, the hunting, the space, versus the psychological relief you get from avoiding things, avoiding future worries about, say, supply chains or external controls or just density?
Is the real value in removing fear, not just adding perks?
Maybe something to consider.
Definitely something to consider. Until next time, keep exploring and keep digging deeper.